Hello, and welcome to State of Our Workforce Unpacked. My name is Henry Danner, and I'm the Network Manager at the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. Unpacked takes the national conversations from State of Our Workforce and brings them to the ground level, spotlighting how workforce equity shows up in communities across our network. It's where our nationally powered, locally driven ethos comes to life. In many companies, workers show up, do their jobs, and go home, often without much say in the decisions that affect their work or a clear way to share in the success that they help create. That disconnect can lead to high turnover, low trust, and missed opportunities for growth. But some employers are proving there's another way. At OptiMax Systems, a precision optics manufacturer in upstate New York, the focus is on transparency, trust, and participation. Employees aren't just trained to perform technical tasks. They're also given opportunities to develop leadership skills, contribute ideas, and shape the culture of the workplace. And when the company succeeds, workers share in that success. We're joined by Ali Mendoza, Director of Human Resources and Chair of the National Fund's Board of Directors, to unpack OptiMax's approach to engaging workers and building skills. We'll learn how they created a culture where people feel valued and invested in the company's future. Together, we'll explore a powerful real-world example of how engagement strategies can drive equity, innovation, and long-term success. In the last State of Our Workforce episode, we heard how employee ownership can close wealth gaps and give workers a real stake in the future of their companies. But ownership is just one strategy. What about companies that find other ways to share profits, decision-making, and skills? That's what we're unpacking today. I'm joined by a good friend, Ali Mendoza of OptiMax Systems, who will take us inside OptiMax's culture of transparency, trust, and participation. Ali, how's it going, my friend?
Henry, great to see you. I'm doing well. I'm thrilled to be here and to have this conversation. So thank you again for the invite.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. This is a topic that has piqued my interest ever since the last episode of Unpacked that we released, where I learned a little bit how this shows up with some of our other network partners. So I'm happy to be talking with you to go a little bit deeper on, like, you know, how this shows up in your company that you work at, OptiMax. So why don't we just start, you know, at the very beginning, and you can just tell us a little bit about how OptiMax first became engaged with the National Fund and what made that partnership critical and important to you all.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important to note that OptiMax is a precision optics manufacturing company that makes things like these. Okay, these are precision components. We make these for research and in industry. We don't have a catalog of optics. Everything is built to print. So we have hundreds of technicians that we have had to hire and teach over the years of how to make these components. And many of these technicians knew nothing about precision optics. They're artists, gamers, musicians, chefs, tinkerers. They liked working with their hands in the type of environments that we had here at OptiMax. So we had to really figure out over the years, how do we train, develop, attract, create the right systems and processes to keep, retain people and continue to grow the business. And the OptiMax president at the time was very involved in outreach and advocacy for our community and through the networks in Washington, D.C., through the National Skills Coalition. We were introduced to the National Fund team, and we were invited to join the Partners Council. And the Partners Council was a fantastic just example of getting together organizations that were committed to lifelong learning, wanting to continue to grow and expand, and had the mindset of we're all in this together, but we've got to be willing to learn with each other and share best practices and just be open to different thought process and ways of doing things. And the Partners Council was the first exposure that I had to the National Fund and then the power of the network and the power of amplifying and creating the right infrastructure to help businesses learn from one another. And that was about 10 years ago when that first happened. It's been an awesome ride.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Way before my time at the National Fund, but happy to hear that you're still around. And, you know, one of the things I've enjoyed during my time here at the National Fund is actually hosting this podcast, because I get to hear about innovative strategies out in the field. So I mentioned in the intro that the last episode, we spoke with a couple of our other network partners that talked about how employee ownership shows up in their communities and in their projects they're doing. So I would love to like go a little bit deeper into like, how does employee ownership look at OptiMax? How do you approach engaging employees in decisions and helping to determine the direction the company goes in? And I'm also just wondering, you know, how does OptiMax ensure that employees benefit when the company does well under these models that you've developed?
Yeah, that's really good question, because it continues to change. And I think that's really the key variable here, is that there's not a one size fits all approach. You know, just looking at the multiple generations of our workforce, we've got a 24-hour operation. We've got three shifts. We've got five different generations within the workplace, all of which we have to be really conscious of. How do we continue to stay connected and communicate in languages and ways and methodologies that are actually meaningful? And I guess one example I can start with is just our manufacturing environment is not an assembly line based process. We've got a bunch of work cells, and each one of these work cells has a specific niche per se, whether it's a size of optic, a certain type of shape, but we've got different types of people in all of these cells across the 24-hour operation. So one of the key things that we've tried to really embrace is reinforcing the importance of those closest to the work need to be able to have the autonomy and the authority to make the decisions that best impact them and their teams. Mm-hmm. So we have this exercise in term that we call ground rules. Okay, and it's really nothing more than making sure that the people in these teams can get together and come up with the ground rules for how they're going to act, behave, show up to work on time, basically things that they can then in turn hold themselves accountable for, to making sure that they're meeting the expectation within their peers. Because from an HR standpoint, we're not throwing this massive policy binder out to our workforce. It's like, boy, you got to deal with your peers because you're not following through with what you've agreed upon to follow through on. Peers are going to be much more tougher than HR per se is. So mm-hmm. within the human resource infrastructure at OptiMax, we need to be able to create the mechanisms that allow people to get together to create these types of ground rules that allow them to operate autonomously, but also in the best way that suits their needs. So as organizations, businesses have to be willing to accommodate. Businesses that take the approach of my way or the highway, well, you can do that, but boy, it's going to be a frustrating process for the workforce that we've learned. And as an outcome of taking approaches like this, we've got over 90% retention. We've got a very high employee referral approach, and we don't provide employee referral bonuses. Okay. As an organization, we participate in a 25% per month bonus profit sharing program, where every single month we have company meetings for all of our shifts, all of our people, where we have an open book discussion. We discuss all of our finances. We discuss what the break even is for the month. And when we are profitable, we share 25% of that profit with the workforce. There's no commission plans. There's nothing that exists, but let's make sure that when we are successful as a team, we all get to share in the benefit of that. And with these company meetings, we have dedicated Q&A time. So we're continuing to expose the workforce to, okay, let's questions of interest, questions of topics, concern. Let's talk about this collectively. So whether we're in a large group company meeting, we also have forums and facilitated discussions with our team leaders, with our group leaders, so that we're continuing to learn how do we talk to each other, build trust, build transparency, navigate through tensions, and doing all of these things. These were ideas and recommendations from the workforce. So having the opportunity to follow through and try things out that that the workforce recommends has resulted in very, very positive outcomes for us. And in addition to that, we have a significant amount of employee-led initiatives and efforts. And we look at it as a way to allow people to just do something sometimes a little bit different, whether it's managing a sports team, whether it's creating an effort around Food Link or United Way effort, or doing a blood drive or biometric screening. These are just ideas that various employees have passions about, which we say, okay, if you can get people that will come along with you that want to participate in it, fantastic, perfect, do it. And that type of mentality, it can take a little bit of time away from production, but it's about supporting and reinforcing what's important to the people. And we find that productivity can go up, profitability can go up. It can help just manage when times are stressful and tension based, and we're going to continue to do that. And we think that employers that embrace that type of change have to have a certain level of vulnerability, have to understand that some things just aren't going to work, and that's okay too. But the willingness to try new things out and empower the workforce to get involved in ways that are a little bit more non-traditional, more flat versus the typical pyramid-based hierarchy structure just results in really good outcomes. So that's what working with the National Fund has allowed us to do and allowed me to do within my role as far as getting exposure to communities and best practice providers within the country. That is a very, very powerful tool and one that we continue to learn from a lot.
Yeah, man, that sounds excellent. You said so many of my work, the words that I love to hear when I'm thinking about workforce development and the impact that these strategies can have. I think in another life, I would work at OptiMax. So I'm very intrigued by a lot of the strategies that you're implementing. But one of the words that I want to harp on really quick is trust, right? Because as you were explaining all of these different practices that the company has implemented, I said to myself, man, this must do a lot to like increase the trust levels amongst the employees, like amongst the trust between the employees and the leadership, the trust between the employees and their colleagues, you know. And it just made me think how powerful and how important that is in a workplace. Is there any, you have any like feedback on just like how you've seen that in action, how you've seen that trust building or the impact of that?
Yeah. Well, trust is this, it is an evolving approach. It is ongoing. It is super easy to break. Okay. And then you've got to start over again. And look, we have learned really tough lessons of just how do we do things in a way that's efficient, that's effective. And there's been some examples where, we have just learned some tough lessons on, man, I wish we would have done that a different way. But being open about that, calling out yourself and just the fact that, look, this did not turn out the way that we wanted it to is something that we found that the more comfortable you get owning publicly in front of the team that we're all human, we are going to continue to make some mistakes. Okay. How do we get better at making mistakes and recovering from it? There's almost this change of dialogue that we have to go through. Look, the customers that we are working for that are asking us to make these components that are going into enabling technologies, that whether it's aerospace, medical, defense, I mean, you name it, anything that uses light needs some sort of optic. We are learning all the time. Okay, how do we do this better? How do we check and adjust? It's not about just having the best equipment. It's about understanding what you have, understanding capabilities and limitations, and having strategy towards it. We've got an HR department of 11 people for a business size of about 450 employees. I mean, we've got continuous improvement, which is industrial engineering. We have industrial psychology, as far as we've got a role for corporate culture and corporate effectiveness. So we have found that over the years, we have had to create the right roles different roles, get in the right people to make sure that if the workforce is going to be one of, you know, the key elements of what makes OptumX successful, then we have to dedicate the resources to make sure that we're able to navigate conversations, that we're able to train and develop our team leaders and our group leaders to understand learning styles and approaches, to learn how do you provide constructive feedback? How do you coach? How do you advise? How do you discipline? There's all these things that we have found that are more meaningful than the traditional pathways, and that we have made sure that we have brought in the right resources, the right expertise to help collectively grow and evolve the organization. So the trust element of this is that it's not a revolving door. We have very high retention, and the people that work here continuing to refer others that they know within the industry and not in the industry to come work with OptumX, because we've got a commitment to training. And the bottom line is that we continue to demonstrate time and time again is when you get the right people in the right roles, you create extraordinary outcomes and extraordinary results. That's culturally, that's performance based, that's organizational based. That's just, you can see it in people's faces and how they talk about it. But it's also not for everybody as well. So as an organization, we have to be okay that, look, this type of, and there are some people that want to come into work and be told what to do every single day,
right,
every single moment of the day. You need some people like that, but we believe that we can't have an entire organization that is established with that sort of a mindset. So we've had to be really picky. We've had to be really conscious and forward thinking about the people in the influential roles that we have and making sure that we're continuing to head in the right direction. So the trust, in my opinion, shows up in a lot of different ways, from participation at events to thank yous to coming in the work and wanting to work overtime, wanting to work during shifts where everyone else is sleeping. You know, there's all these little indicators all over the place that we see and view as elements of trust and ways in which we've got to make sure that we don't be blind to the obvious. And that requires us to have open ears and availability to make sure that we're keeping close contact and pulse checks within all elements of the workforce.
Yeah, I love that you describe trust as not like this finite beginning and end trust building, right? It's like a continuum of, like, it gets broken, but then it gets rebuilt and repaired. And I think that's a great mentality and to establish, and a great thing to have it as an organizational culture. Another thing you mentioned that I want to follow up on is, like, you know, every worker is not the same. Like, it seems like you all have taken this approach to, like, seeing the worker, understanding what their desires are, how they want to work, what motivates them, right? So you have some people that are natural leaders that you can cultivate. So can you talk a little bit about the approach that you take, that the company takes to, like, figuring out who those people are, and then how do you balance, like, building the technical skills of the workforce with, like, nurturing those leadership skills and building capacity in that area?
Yeah, that's really important. You know, an interesting thing. So we're in Rochester, New York, which is between Buffalo and Syracuse, so upstate Western New York. Rochester is one of a couple of places in the world where you can get a certificate to PhD in an optics related field. So the educational infrastructure here is fantastic. However, the traditional pathway of a formalized education isn't for everyone. And we totally embrace that. But what we have found is that if people like the work they're doing, they're going to want to become better at it. Okay. And that starts with sometimes just a simple tour. So we will at times hire someone with no experience over somebody that has maybe some technical experience or formalized education. If the individual shows super enthusiasm over just the nature of the work environment, what it is that they'd be doing, because we know that they're going to come in hungry and eager to learn and also challenge us with just helping them get up to speed. So we have invested a significant amount into having a training and development infrastructure here that complements the academic infrastructure outside of OptiMax. We've hired math teachers to come teach fundamentals of mathematics, but we have also just found that a lot of the non-traditional students that like working with their hands, you can't bring them in on day one and start talking about physics, but when you start showing them the process of removing material from glass into a certain shape, a certain diameter, there's all these keywords that start coming up that's probably going to start resonating with them from their math classes in high school or just from a previous life. And through that, we can make it much more relatable and much less stressful than just traditional learning through books and examples. So we have, I believe, really taken progressive steps to make sure that anybody who finds this type of work interesting, we can train them how to do it. And we've got the tools and the resources and the support infrastructure outside of the walls of OptiMax to complement that. And we pay 100% of tuition assistance as well in advance. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's not like we're asking employees to put the money out of their pocket. If they're demonstrating that they've got the intrinsic drive and the ability to want to learn and do what they are doing even better, then we want to support them as much as we can. So we pay for their education in advance. And some people think we're crazy for doing that. But what I can say after doing it for, you know, almost 19 years is we don't have people just getting degrees and bouncing out the door. It's not how it works. And people are usually pretty excited about it.
You said 90% retention rate. So that speaks for itself as well. You know, I think that so much of what OptiMax does aligns with like the work that we do here at the National Fund, the work that we support out in the field when we start talking about human-centered approaches to workforce development. I hear a lot of that in what you're saying. And I'm just wondering, in your own words, how do you see OptiMax's experience with employee ownership connecting to the broader mission of the National Fund? And then also, just like from your purview and where you sit, what role do you think employers across the nation can play in advancing equity and innovation across the workforce in similar fashions as the ways OptiMax has done it?
Yeah. A lot of questions in there, I guess.
Yeah.
What's key for me and helps keep me grounded, okay, is that systems change is really, really important, okay? And what's gotten us to this point isn't necessarily going to get us to the next point. Mm-hmm. So the ability to understand that as organizations, we have to embrace this mindset of lifelong living and lifelong learning. And that means we've got to change the way in which we are doing things. We have to evolve the way in which we are doing things. And the National Fund's ability to establish relationships within the communities that they are involved with, to find the best of the best, and to have the ability to amplify, convene, and help communities learn from one another is something that we want to be part of and something other businesses should want to be a part of as well. And if businesses aren't willing to embrace the fact that in order to stay competitive globally, in order to stay competitive locally and as best employers, we have to learn from another and be willing to try new things out. And the businesses that do that, the businesses that can embrace the fact that organizations like the National Fund, where they can convene and inspire and get together groups to help learn from, why wouldn't you want to take advantage of that opportunity? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you want to learn with others? Why wouldn't you want to help continue to grow your own organizations and communities to be better employers? So it takes a certain mindset that I would just encourage the listeners, business leaders, human resource professionals, community-based organizations to continue doing what you can to convene organizations so that they can learn together and stay curious together, and in the end, create even better environments that allows the historical systematic barriers that have been so challenging for some organizations to get past to help continue to move forward. You've got job quality toolkits. You've got so many resources that are available. And I just think the National Fund's team expertise, knowledge, know-how, ability to navigate and understand is just something that is really, really important and is going to be super important as our country continues to, you know, climb the ladder of global competition and just making sure that we're creating the right environments where people want to work in and stay in.
Yes. Thank you so much for just like the positive recognition of the work that we're doing. And yeah, I just want to second everything you just said about, you know, why wouldn't organizations want to be involved in learning and continuing to learn and evolve. So thank you, Ali. This has been a really, really, really rich conversation. I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of this. So I just want to say thanks once again for joining us. And we're going to close out on that note and tune in for future episodes where we'll continue to explore the future of workforce equity with our network partners, such as Ali. And until next time on State of Our Workforce, everyone take care.
Take care.
State of Our Workforce Unpacked is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Joshua Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked on our website at www.nationalfund.org. Be sure to follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to watch live episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked. Don't forget to subscribe to State of Our Workforce wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to bringing you more valuable conversations in the future.